Hello, everyone, and welcome to SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. Today's Facebook Live chat is unfortunately broadcast via mobile device today, since the desktop version of Facebook Live is down. So getting a little bit different perspective on the home office here in Findlay, Ohio. I'll be trying today to speak to three topics that are of particular interest in the last week in the media related to international education topics. And I'll be posting the links to the articles that I'm referencing today onto the SMIE Facebook page related to this video after the event today. So I wish you the best in terms of finding this page and this video, and we'll be getting to you very shortly. So if you would like to join me today via chat, please feel free to log on to the social media international education page at SMIE, facebook.com/SMIE Consulting LLC. So that link will get you to the live video, and we'll be able to have the chat from there. So as I mentioned, I'll be doing this chat via mobile device today. So with Facebook Live for desktop down, I'm resorting to this, and we'll update the links to this page tomorrow during my, or later this afternoon when the live event is over. The three articles that I'd like to cover today relate to, first topic is about foreign STEM students and their preferences for studying abroad. There was an article out, obviously STEM has gotten a lot of press over the last few years related to last couple of years with potential changes coming down the pike from the current administration related to work authorization or work possibilities for students once they finish their degrees. For those who aren't aware, the current law allows students who have finished degrees in STEM-related fields, science, technology, engineering, or math, to pursue up to 3 years of paid work experience in their field of study after they finish that bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees. So that obviously is a big advantage over just any student coming for a business degree or a humanities degree that might be looking to work after graduation. So that STEM authorization time that these students have available to them is of great value, that up to 3 years of paid work experience. So there was a study recently done and the article came out in yesterday's Inside Higher Ed related to a study that will the U.S. keep the best and brightest postdocs in STEM fields, foreign STEM PhD students. And what they've done is they surveyed across 54 top chemistry programs, so that's a limited slice of the STEM population, surveyed 54 STEM programs in the United States with over 1,600 PhD students responding to that survey. The results of the finding kind of run counter to what the public opinion is of at least international students looking at the United States as a potential destination. And the results of the study may have more to do with these students who have already been here and invested such a long period of time, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of their lives in the United States pursuing their doctoral program. They don't want to give up the fight. So what the results of that survey revealed was, even when controlling for ability and comparing students from similar backgrounds and programs, that international students are more in these STEM programs, particularly this chemistry programs around the country, the top programs in the country, are generally more interested in pursuing careers in the United States rather than going to a third or fourth country. So job offers would, if they were at particular institutions, and these are folks who are looking more on the academic side of things, that even aren't necessarily, if they're looking at academic careers, they wouldn't be part of, there's a clearer path to H-1B for those that pursue STEM OPT If they're looking to work at a university, as the H-1Bs that universities have access to are exempt from the traditional cap of STEM that are allowed by congressional mandate. So that's good news, at least on the STEM front, that we're seeing certainly the United States maintaining it as kind of an end result for those students who are coming for doctoral programs. So that's encouraging on that front. So I would certainly encourage those who want to find out a little bit more about that study to check out the link that I'll be posting on the Facebook page later today. And hopefully that will help provide some answers to you that might be looking for some information on this particular field. So next topic that I'd like to cover today relates to Australia becoming now the second, soon to become the second largest destination country for students that are pursuing higher education degrees in the world. So we know for a number of years, for many, many years, the United States has been number one, but it's been a battle between the UK, Australia, for number two. Number two is, and we're talking for the UK, we're looking at they're currently, based on the Project Atlas numbers from this past year, UK had about half as many, just under half as many international students studying there in 2017 as the United States did. The United States was over 1 million for the second year in a row. UK topped 500,000 for the first time. So Australia, according to the Project Atlas numbers, was a distant fourth place, 327,600 in 2017. China was actually in third place at 442,000. So how the numbers are actually being calculated in Australia versus the UK, that's something that we'll obviously need to spend a little more time looking into. But the ones who put out the report is University College London. Researchers say were the ones saying that the UK is now behind the United States and Australia. So interestingly, there's obviously been movements in Australia to rapidly expand, to perhaps take advantage of the public perceptions around the world of coming international students who have previously been coming to the United States in increasingly larger numbers every year. That has stopped in the last year. So the questions are now, who's picking up the slack? We obviously know in the UK, in the US, students have chosen other destination countries over traditional US institutions, Canada being the most prominent beneficiary that we would see immediate results from north of the border compared to the United States. The other options in terms of what the British have been doing, there's been a lot of talk in the UK about how Brexit was going to impact international student flows to the United States, how international students, whether they were counted in net migration numbers in the UK. That's been a big debate over the last 3-4 years. And that's, but there seems to be a move towards a more open policy now, but who knows how long that will last, and if any concrete actions are going to be put behind that talk. So we're not sure where the numbers are coming from in particular. The report also warned that UK immigration laws there have, after Brexit, would need to be changed to portray the UK as a more welcoming destination for international students. So their encouragement there is that from this UCL study that the British Council really needs to look at. It's what its policies are towards the overseas students. Obviously, the British Council isn't a government body. It's a quasi-governmental organization, public-private trust, really. And that's the UK government's policies seem to be the ones that are been most driving what's happening. So this report, though it's gotten a lot of press, obviously in the UK, here in the US, but also in Australia, it's being seen as kind of an alarm bell going off for the UK and their international education policies to perhaps make some changes. So interesting. I'll post the link to the BBC article on the Facebook page in a few moments here, but wanted to certainly share how this is really impacting, stories like this can really impact what's going on in the world. So in terms of what's next, I mean, I've covered today, obviously the STEM story for US graduates on doctoral programs. And again, it's a limited slice of the STEM population, but certainly that is a little bit more positive story than perhaps might have been expected about the UK. So certainly the BBC story about Australia overtaking the UK as a number two destination, I think that's frankly a little bit of a red herring. Certainly there are alarm bells that the UK should be paying attention to, as US should be paying attention to the many alarm bells that have been going off in this country over the last 2 years. But frankly, what's happening in the UK, that's particular study, I think it's also missing the larger picture, and certainly the numbers, the study did not cite any particular numbers as it was reported in the BBC story, but it would have had, in order for Australia to have overtaken the UK in a year, they would have had to add over 170,000 new international students, which would be more than doubling the number of higher ed students that would be pursuing degrees in Australia over a year on year terms. So that's clearly a bit too far of a jump, I think, in terms of real numbers. That would have gotten a lot more press if that were the case, where Australian numbers would have jumped over 50% for degree-seeking students. What it does ignore also is China as the current number three destination. Obviously, we know China is the biggest exporter of international students around the world, not just to the United States, but to Australia, to the UK, to many other destination countries. They are the number one sender. But they're also, in the last 10, 15 years, they've significantly ramped up their inbound international education strategy in terms of primarily exchanges. There are very few students that are actually outside of, from the English-speaking world at least, that are going to China for degree-seeking studies. It's mostly summer exchanges, maybe a semester exchange. So the greater majority of international students in China are typically short-term, not degree. So there may be some numbers there that might not match up. So interesting to get to dig a little deeper into that study. The final piece that I'd like to cover today is a paid article that popped up in a Chronicle of Higher Ed the other day, and it had to do particularly with digital strategies for international admissions offices. And this is something that, for those who know me, is very near and dear to my heart in terms of what institutions can and should be doing to enhance their international admissions efforts. This is a paid article that appeared in the Chronicle this morning. This happens regularly with the Chronicle now and inside higher ed, frankly, that companies will do these paid ads to kind of showcase either something really strong that they're doing in the marketplace, research that they're presenting, success stories, all of that kind of thing. So this one was actually put out by IDP. IDP is out of Australia, and they're now a global brand primarily focused on Australia as a destination country, but working with Australian universities. IDP is also part owner of IELTS. IELTS is one of the major, in addition to TOEFL, IELTS, PTE Academic, those are some of the major in English language program providers for testing for international students that are looking to go to English speaking destination countries for study. But IDP has a very strong network of agents around the world that They use not only to recruit for Australian universities, but British now, American, Canadian institutions are also using IDP. IDP has also recently purchased Hot Courses Group in the last couple of years, and in interest of truth in advertising, Hot Courses Group is one of my employers, and their parent company is IDP. But the reason I bring up this article today is primarily because of its focus on looking at what U.S. colleges, kind of the challenges that U.S. colleges are facing in today's environment. And it really presents an interesting picture of where kind of the disconnects are happening between institutions and the students that they're trying to recruit. Obviously, there's a lot to overcome in terms of public perception of the United States as a welcoming environment. Campaigns like You Are Welcome Here have certainly done a lot to allay a lot of those fears. But what the article in particular relates to is data that Hot Courses Group does provide to its client universities through its Insights tool, which analyzes over 34 million visits to their international course site. Shows regional pockets of opportunity for institutions that might have program matches to what students from particular countries are looking for. So what it does show is that U.S. is still up there as a number one destination, or if not number one, number two or three in the majority of countries that Hot Courses is operating in, which are main destination or source countries for the United States and other English-speaking countries around the world. So I think what this particular article does relate to is it talks about how U.S. institutions can stay relevant when talking to their audiences, their student audiences, as well as parents. But it makes the point about how important digital tools are to maintaining conversations, encouraging re-engagement with students throughout the year, throughout their admission cycle, and what the points of interest are that institutions should be making sure that they are meeting students where they are, and that students are expecting technology to be central to their student journey and part of their communication with institutions and their admissions and their research and their eventual enrollment at your institutions. So how are you using video? How are you using mobile technology, mobile-friendly, mobile-first websites to reach your student audiences? Are you able to have these kind of chats via mobile device with your prospective students? So that's the thing that I think a lot of institutions are really struggling with for when they're scrambling for resources, if they don't perhaps have the level of comfort that they need to really, or just manpower to affect the kind of changes in their day-to-day to reach these students. So I think there's a lot that institutions can use. So meeting, again, with the bottom line being meeting students where they are, not where you want them to be as an institution, I think is a great takeaway. Certainly something at Education USA, I always preach to our advisors around the world and to any U.S. institutions that we're looking to connect with students overseas, is you have to have a presence where your prospective students are, whether that be on the various social media channels, messenger apps, a variety of messenger apps that exist these days. Are you meeting them, have a presence with them, and giving them opportunities to connect with you where they're spending their time, not where you want them to spend their time? So I think that's a piece of the puzzle that many institutions aren't ready to make that investment and connection to their student audiences, but it's a necessary step. It's not a mobile-only step or a digital-only strategy. It's really really a piece of the puzzle that I think it has to be an essential component. A digital-first strategy is almost a must for students these days. And I see I've got a comment now, and I'll see if I can get to you, Jim. Good to hear from you, Jim. And the question is, does the institutional website have the influence that it used to have, or is social media more important, or are they mutually beneficial? Well, that's a great question, Jim. And certainly I don't think institutional websites are ever going to decline to the point where they're irrelevant for prospective students. Survey after survey still shows, whether it's Hot Courses that have done surveys, the InTech group, we've seen IDP's done surveys on this separately. College Week Live has done surveys like this in the past, where websites are either one or two after maybe college search sites, institutional websites are typically in the top two or three at worst in terms of the primary sources for students, where they're getting their information. And I think as college search sites change and adapt to these new tools and becoming more digitally friendly and mobile first perspectives on those, that the social media sites obviously have relevance to maybe not later on necessarily, where an institution or a student is going to want to have a conversation on a social media site, on your institutional page, Facebook page, about your institution. They may be just doing secret shopping, as they do with websites, secret shopping around or asking friends and family who may have contacts. They'll ask on social media what their opinions of certain institutions are. So I think that social media will have different value later on in the process. And I think this has historically been the case, that Facebook groups either get created organically or by admissions offices each year for incoming classes, and those tend to have very high value in the recruitment process towards the end of the admission cycle. But at the beginning, when it's more of the search phase, when they're not really feeling the need to get readily engage with students unless they reach out first to an institution and say, hey, I'd love to talk with an international student about your institution. And there are opportunities, obviously, on the institutional site to make that happen. So I think there are increasingly tools, whether it's embedded widgets for chats or APIs that allow you to have your international ambassadors chatting online. There's new services that are coming online that do that. So, there's a lot of different things out there that can make institutional websites more student-focused, prospective student-focused, and engaging. And I think that's the real piece. If the option is available for a prospective international student who gets on your website, who wants to learn more, to chat with someone from that school, a current student from that school, I think that has real added value for universities. And again, keeping a digital first strategy. If you're doing that and committing your time and resources to that, having student workers covering emails, but also maybe doing an hour or two a week on monitoring chat on your institutional site, if you have that kind of a program built in. So these are things that you can really work towards. So thanks for the question, Jim, and glad you were able to join us today. So that about covers what I had to do today, and I apologize again for this being done over a mobile device, so not as able to respond by text in this format. But certainly the links, I've actually was able to publish those to the page, to the Facebook page under this live video chat on my desktop, so I'm just going to record the video there. So it's playing now, and all these links to the three stories are covered. So I do encourage you all to check that out. For those who missed this initial recording, I'll have a redirect to the video on the Facebook page for future reference. So thanks for joining us, and hope you can make it next week. Take care.